The Lean Braves reporting for duty. Fasten your seatbelts and hold on your carrots. You're about to enter the Lean Braves throwdown zone. Accelerating for the simplest solutions, we are Avengers of Health. Hide the donuts. You're listening to the Lean Braves radio show at theleanbraves.com. Welcome, Braves. I'm Ron Jones with Kevin Rail and Greg Hottinger from the Lean Braves. We got a special show today on protein power and manipulating macronutrients. And I'm hot off the trail from the American College of Sports Medicine Health Fitness Summit last week in Las Vegas. I've got all the latest nutrition updates. And I've got Greg back on the show with us today. And he's a registered dietitian nutritionist accredited by the American Dietetic Association. He also works with Novo Wellness, and he's got a new book out, and he's been on the show before, and we're very happy to have him back, along with our special ops guru, organic throwdown expert, Kay Rail from Park City. And Greg, you're coming out of Colorado Springs, right?
No, out of Boulder, Colorado.
Boulder, Colorado. Okay, so we're three different points in the country here. Hey, welcome back, guys. I'm really excited. I told Kevin and you before the show, Greg, I'm shaking like a leaf on it. Organic avocado tree. I can't wait to get into this topic today.
Excellent.
Hey, we got a little outline here. Let me go through this for everybody. You know, we're going to talk about macronutrients, and I don't think a lot of people understand what macronutrients are, but basically it's fat, carbohydrate, or protein, and how they're being manipulated now for weight loss more effectively, in particular the protein side of it. So we're going to spend a lot of time today talking about protein, why we need a little bit more probably than we're getting, and some misconceptions out there, because the research is showing us that people they're not actually getting an excessive amount of protein like we once thought they were when you look at the latest research. And we're talking about resting metabolic rate and how that factors into how much protein you need, and some under-eating issues, because I've been doing a lot of hydrostatic weighing with my corporate clients underwater, getting some very accurate values on resting metabolism, and I'm finding they're actually under-eating, which is a little bit bizarre, which causes starvation mode and a loss of muscle mass and all kinds of metabolic shooting yourself in the foot type issues. So Why don't we let Greg take a shot at this, Kevin, first, and just kind of lay out, you know, the basic three macronutrients.
All right, sure, Ron. Carbohydrates are certainly the prevailing component of the diet, or they traditionally have been, and I think that's sort of where the crux of the problem has been over the last 20 years is trying to figure out how to make peace with carbohydrates and how much is too much. And certainly in our culture, it's carbohydrates that are refined and in big portions, and so that's just part of our backdrop here. And then fat, we saw fat percentage be so low back in the 80s and 90s, right? The lower that you could go, the better. And now with the Mediterranean diet, starting to see a lot more. It depends on the type of fat, and healthy fats are really important for a variety of reasons. And now with protein, you know, this we've been through sort of the Atkins diet, which swung us to one extreme. And I think today's show we're talking about what a more balanced moderate protein intake looks like.
So here's my man in the street position with this. I started working with bodyfattesting.com. It's a mobile testing truck that goes around, does hydrostatic weighing, underwater weighing, gold standard for establishing that resting metabolism and pounds of lean mass. Linda Finley out here in Ventura, California has been my testing expert. And I started asking her a lot of questions, and I realized through the course of some interviewing with her and hanging out with Linda behind the scenes that she's tested over 10,000 people. And I thought, wow, that's a huge database. I've got to tap into this, right? And And what I got out of her, you guys, is kind of a profile of her leanest people, what they look like, what they do to get lean, and what they do to stay lean. Because interestingly, she just doesn't test most people once. Her corporate clients, she'll go back, you know, two, three, four times a year. And so she's got a lot of data points in these people. It's not a flash in the pan, quick, rapid weight loss diet thing. It's what they do to stay healthy over time. And one of the things I got out of her that was different than what I had been taught in school was a lot higher protein intakes and how valuable those were for not just maintaining lean muscle, but also promoting a little lean muscle growth. And why is muscle important? Well, it's your metabolic engine, you know? And so really this whole hydrostatic weighing thing is not about body fat testing. Yes, we'll get the exact percentage of body fat. It's about how much lean mass you've got and how to fuel it with overall calories and a range of protein. And that's what they were talking a lot about at the American College of Sports Medicine Summit, working with these ranges of macronutrients and the range of protein depending on need. And Kevin, I know you've got some things to say on healthy protein, because one of the knee-jerk reactions is people might go to McDonald's and start eating a bunch of burgers. We don't want that.
Oh, God almighty, yeah. And then I get back into the old Atkins mind frame where the bun becomes distinguished in the circular file, and then I eat the cheese and the burger and have three or four of those.
Well, you know, there's been some talk about grains and how they're not healthy for the gut and cause some kind of perforations. And one of the updates I got, some of that actually came up at ACSM, and the word in the street about that is they don't really believe that grains are toxic for the body within a certain moderation level. And so even with the Olympic nutritionist, a registered dietitian that was there, Nana Meyer, she was talking about the inclusion of some grains and carbohydrates through grains in the diets of our top Olympians.
Yeah. Well, I find it kind of interesting how all of a sudden grains have become bastardized out of the Klubus diet, in my opinion. All these years have gone by, I haven't heard one negative thing about grains. Now all of a sudden, they become the new enemy. They were like, yes, of course, grains are carbohydrates, but when the Atkins diet was hot, all carbs were the enemy, and everybody hated them, and everyone ostracized them. And now all of a sudden, I'm seeing more and more people just jumping on this hating the grains bandwagon, and I'm like, I'm walking around shocked. I'm still trying to put my head around it, and I'm like, it doesn't even make sense to me. You know, I go back to grade school mentality, grade two mentality, which is if it's whole food and it's put here on Earth by God in some way, shape, or form, or it's natural, mm-hmm. without any kind of contamination with pesticides or chemicals, and it can grow and do its own thing, then to me, that's a clean food, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
As far as this toxicity thing, I still refuse to believe that 100% until I see some conclusive evidence. I know I eat grains all the time, and I know many people who eat them as well who have no bad reactions to them whatsoever. And as a matter of fact, you have to have some form of good carbohydrate in your system if you are an Olympic athlete or if you're a recreational athlete or anything other pertaining to sports or fitness or weight training.
Well, let's touch.
And I think I get Greg to agree with me on that.
I mean, in grains, we're talking about grains on our protein show, quote unquote, because grains do have some degree of protein, correct?
They do. They have. A lot of grains are relatively high in protein for grain.
Can you give us some samples?
Yeah, I can give examples. You got wheat berries, you got barley, you got quinoa. Quinoa is known as a grain, but it's actually a seed. But it's very high in protein, and it's a complete protein. It has all the amino acids represented. It's one of my favorites. And you got all the wheats, too, like red wheat, hard winter wheat, all those. They're all high in protein, like 7 grams of protein per quarter cup or something like that. And I may be off with those amounts. Greg probably knows more than me exactly.
What do you think,
but
Greg?
They're all high in fiber as well.
What do you think, Greg?
Well, you know, gosh, it's such an interesting thing because, you know, historically, I mean, if you're going to look at the paleo diet, right, this is predating agriculture. There was a time when we weren't farmers. We weren't eating many grains. And so this is what makes this whole thing sort of complicated. It's not like we're the tiger, and you never question what a tiger is supposed to eat.
Right.
They've always been eating sort of the same thing. For us, you know, these grains, you know, they popped on the scene, and some people seem to tolerate them very well. I feel like I handle wheat quite well, and yet there's a lot of people who clearly don't handle wheat very well. So that's what makes it a little bit more confusing. But I think Kevin's right that, like, we need carbs. We need quality carbs, and so it's a matter of trying to figure out which ones are, you know, tolerated well by you. Is it dairy products? Is it wheat? Maybe not. But is it quinoa? Probably. Sweet potatoes, you know, winter squash. I mean, there's just a lot of different complex carbs to choose from that are quality. But I don't know. With grains, I think people overdo it. The problem with wheat is, you know, it's crackers, it's bread, it's
right.
waffles, it's pancake, you know.
Yeah.
It just goes on
yeah.
and on and on. There's too much.
Well, I think our position at this point is we're down with it if it's organic and it's whole. And until we see some more evidence, that's going to be our basic position within some reason and moderation.
Right. And I mean, I would put it at a gray area right now, but a very light gray area.
Right.
And like you guys were saying, you have to look at the big picture, and is it processed? That's the key thing. that Greg was getting at. The crackers and the breads and the bagels and the danishes and everything, they're all processed grains. They got zero nutrient value whatsoever. That's what you want to watch.
Exactly.
In my opinion.
So let's jump back into macro manipulation. So, you know, we've got our macronutrients, our big sources of energy here. We've got fat, and, you know, we're going to emphasize healthy fats like avocados and, you know, olive oil, things like that. Seeds and nuts have fat in it, right? Good fat. Fish has good fat. We've got protein, and it doesn't have to be meat. We're going to talk about non-meat sources of protein today. And we've got carbohydrates, and that doesn't mean crackers and, you know, white bread from the Wonder Company, you know, who's going bankrupt, by the way. You know,
it's, we gotta get them on the firing squad before they go bankrupt, though.
That's right. It's good sources of carbohydrate. And teasing into this hydrostatic weighing research a little bit, or anecdotal feedback from Linda, is that if we dig into her profile of these 10,000-plus people that are her leanest people out of that group, they don't eat a lot of fruits, but they eat a lot of vegetables. So they typically eat a little bit lower glycemic index diet, too. And that was also touched on at ACSM, not as deeply, but they did bring that up. They talked about GI index a little bit. So I think that's something to kind of keep our radar focused on is, you know, people that are eating a lot of fruit and not a lot of vegetables and not a lot of protein have a problem with weight management that from the feedback I'm getting. But one thing you get out of the hydrostatic weighing is a resting metabolic rate. And I don't think a lot of people understand the significance of that, but you have a certain amount of calories that your body needs just to breathe and run organ function before you go to work or exercise or do whatever you're going to do throughout the day. So basically, you get up and kind of sit around the couch. This is a RMR amount of caloric need. And for me, that's 1,836 calories a day before I do anything other than just sit on my butt. So I found the ranges after going through about 100 of my corporate clients, you guys, for women that RMR was ranging around, you know, 1,300 to 1,500 calories plus easy, which, you know, right there is over what some of these diet programs recommend for total calorie intake. And then some of the men were, you know, exceeding 1,900 calories a day easily for RMR, as high as 2,600 calories a day just for resting metabolism. Why does all this matter? Because if you're not just meeting that, but you need to be exceeding your RMR caloric intake. Because if not, you start burning muscle for fuel. And that's the last thing we want. So go back to what I started with at the beginning of the show. This whole hydrostatic weighing and weight management is getting very focused on how much muscle you've got and how to optimize keeping it and maybe even adding to it. And Greg, maybe you can dig into that a little bit more from a registered dietitian standpoint.
Yeah, I can just back up what you said. When I was at the Duke Diet and Fitness Center, we tested people, and those numbers sound right. And if you're undercutting the RMR, it's just counterproductive. You know, not only are you losing muscle tissue, but your body is starting to raise the red flag of, like, wait a minute, we're not getting enough to meet our basic needs, so we've got to become more efficient. And efficiency is the enemy, and you're trying to lose weight. You know, it can slow down by 20%, which is pretty significant.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's right. You want to look at RMR. I've had so many clients that come to me that their doctor, you know, maybe they're 220-pound female, and their doctor tries to put them on a 1,200-calorie plan. Well, right off the bat, you know this 220-pound woman's RMR is probably 1,600.
Exactly.
And if she undereats that, then not only is she going to, you know, she might have initial results, but then the body will adjust. She's going to lose muscle. It's going to drive her metabolism down, and she's going to get frustrated. That's the pattern we see over and over again.
Right, and when they yo-yo diet, they typically lose more lean mass, and therefore it is harder to keep the fat weight off because they have less of a metabolic engine to chew up that fat for fuel when they're sleeping and resting. Hey, let's dig into the obesity and resting metabolic needs, because there's some misconceptions out there, and part of that was on my end until I really got into this the last few months, and I started realizing that people that are obese typically have a little bit higher resting metabolic rate because they're moving around a whole lot of mass. So if you're a 300-pound person, you're going to have some muscle in your legs from moving that kind of mass around all day. And we've got to be really careful, whether you're a health professional working with a client or you're just somebody from the public listening to this show, you damn well better not drop below your resting metabolic rate, because you're shooting yourself in the metabolic foot. You've got to feed that muscle and try to keep as much as you can while you're losing the fat weight as you go along.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. That really ties into expectations around weight loss too, because if you if you do it right, you are preserving the muscle mass that you have to the best that you can as you lose weight, which is going to keep your metabolism higher. So it's an interesting thing, because I see both sides. I see formulas that overestimate for people. I have clients come to me that have 200 pounds to lose, and then they plug into a formula, and it tells them that they need, their RMR is 2,800. And I don't think it's that high. And I think a lot of these formulas are a little bit off on that side, because we know fat in the body doesn't require as many calories to maintain as muscle. In fact, it's muscle can be, 35 to 50 calories per pound, whereas fat might be as low as 2 to 5 calories per pound.
Yeah, it just kind of sits around. That's a great thing about doing this hydrostatic weighing, you guys, if you have the opportunity to do that. The bodyfattests.com company is not in every city all over the United States, but they have a few trucks scattered around the country. But there's no more guesswork. I mean, they come out of the truck, they have a unique data set. We know exactly how many pounds of lean mass they have. We plug that into the protein range, and we know how many calories they need to fuel the rest of metabolism. And then we factor in about 300 calories for activities, daily living, walking around or whatever, and then I look at how much they're exercising and how hard, and we throw another 300 to 600+ calories on for exercise, and we start really dialing this thing in. And what Linda's told me is, man, things are going to change pretty quickly in a positive way when you start getting all this done. So anyway, just to touch on that again, if you're overweight or especially obese, make sure that you're giving yourself enough calories for resting metabolism. It's so easy to drop down into that, hey, I've got to go to 1,100 calories a day and starve that weight off. But man, you're just shooting yourself in the foot metabolically. It's the worst thing you can do. It's just not good, man.
And perhaps we should go a little further to make this even a little more understandable. And you mentioned this word before, and I'm going to re-mention it. It's called starvation mode.
Yes.
And that's the word on the street kind of that means your body, when it doesn't get enough calories, it basically holds on to stored fat on your body because it doesn't know when it's going to get fed again. And it's called starvation mode. You may not have feelings of starvation, but your body is in starvation mode, and it just holds on to those fat cells because it doesn't know when it's going to get fed again. It was kind of like the feast and famine days years and years ago when the hunters and gatherers would go out looking for food, and they would eat like a huge meal and have a feast, and they wouldn't eat again for weeks until they found something else to eat. And her body would go into starvation mode, and it would hold on to the fat, the stored fat, and it would use it for energy whenever it needed it. And that's actually bad news when it comes to losing weight.
Exactly.
That's what you don't want.
Exactly. This is something else very interesting, guys. I was working with, a few different dietitians, and Greg could back this up a little bit too. But what I found is that, depending on the person, if you go, let's say you have a healthy breakfast that's balanced in a 40-30-30 fashion, 40% being carbohydrates. That seems to be kind of like the magic macronutrient set of numbers right now, or close to it, right? And then you don't eat until 2, and you have another great healthy meal that's perfectly balanced, all organic. You've gone so long without eating that it's like not eating that morning. When you do eat, it just gets stored as fat because you're in that starvation mode. So that was kind of a paradigm shift for me. It's like, wow, you mean I can have some like lean organic protein and it's going to get converted to fat because I've went too long between eating at meals. So one of the, we've heard that breakfast is the most important meal, and a lot of that is tied into getting people out of that starvation mode. But in a related way, not eating enough throughout the day can do the same type of thing. You guys have any comments on that one?
I do. The worst mistake you can make when it comes to weight loss is skipping breakfast. I highly agree with that, because you come up, okay, so you sleep, and that's fine and dandy. Then you wake up, and your body is kind of already in starvation mode. So what you want to do is get your metabolism moving. You want your body to do something to burn calories. If you're not going to exercise, have something to eat. It doesn't have to be something huge. It could be something small. But try to have something to eat as soon as you get up in the morning, and that's going to get your metabolism moving. It's going to get it popping. And then I would suggest eating small, frequent meals every 2.5 hours.
Yeah, that varies. It For me, it's about a 3-hour window, but, you know, for some people it might be four or five. But I think generally what I'm telling people is, you know, if you're not eating within 3 to 4 or 5 hours, maybe up to 6 on the outside, you know, you could be dropping into that starvation mode, and really you're shooting yourself in the metabolic foot, even though maybe you had breakfast.
But so, I highly suggest, I rarely go more than 3 hours without eating something.
Mm-hmm. What do you think on the meal timing? What do you think of the meal timing part of that, Greg?
Well, it's interesting. You know, if you look at, like, the French folks, they don't snack. You know, they eat 3 meals a day. And I think that can work. But it does put a lot of pressure that those meals are pretty balanced and healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're right, Ron, that, like, when you don't go, when you go too long without eating, it's a setup. And basically, not only is there, you know, potentially the slowing part of the body, but there's the appetite. When the appetite gets too big, blood sugar levels drop, and then people end up making poor choices or overeating or eating too fast.
Well, the speed at which people eat was mentioned, too. And then, you know, Kevin and I have talked about that for years. I'm sure you have, too. And people go too long without eating, and then they're so hungry, they eat so fast, they don't get the signal that they're full, and they keep on eating, and next thing they know, they've consumed.
It's so easy to overdo that, especially later in the day. I call it the after 4 p.m., you know, after 4 or after 3, you know, people start getting tired,
mm-hmm.
and if you're too hungry, you know, now you're eating sort of from hunger and somewhat from fatigue, you know, because you're just sort of eating for comfort. So that's probably the biggest mistake that people make. And as for breakfast, you know, I am a proponent that there is not one size fits all. I am a fan of breakfast, and you know, when you look at the National Weight Control Registry, if you look at those people, 80% of them have breakfast, but 20% don't.
Right.
My recommendation to clients is to have something healthy, you know, at least by mid morning, like, you know, kind of thing, a couple hours after you wake up. So something healthy, because I think where the pitfall is, people skip breakfast. You know, they go to work, they have coffee, and the next thing they're into something unhealthy. You know, and so they could have a yogurt, you know, have some low-fat granola or something that at least puts something in there to get the metabolism going, help balance out that appetite.
Right, and what I found, especially with the women, is that they're blowing through breakfast, and when they do eat breakfast, it's very carbohydrate, sugar-oriented. In other words, they're having breakfast cereals and yogurt, and they're not... They're getting the sugared cereals, or they're getting the regular yogurt. And in fact, we're going to do a little yogurt thing here in a minute. And there's no protein.
Ron, you remember those days where you'd have, like, back in the 90s, people would have an orange juice and a bagel.
Right.
And, you know, and it's like 500 calories. And by 10 o'clock in the morning, you're looking around, you're starving.
Yeah. And you're sugar bombed, you know?
Yeah. So, I remember those days. I went through that trial and error years ago. A big Whopping bagel. Blueberry, usually, and like a 16 or 20 ounce bottle of orange juice or a Nantucket nectar. I used to drink those, and it would satisfy my hunger for a minute. I have a shot of energy. 2 hours later, I'd be like comatose, and I'd be drooling at my work desk, and I'd get up and be like, oh, and then I'd starve it.
Yeah.
I'd go get a snack with like pretzels and iced tea. I'm like, oh, this would be this bad for you. I'll just double these down, my bro.
Hey,
and I did that 7 days a week.
This brings us right into our next section on we're going to define lean body mass a little bit more. So basically, it's all the tissue and fluids in your body minus the fat. We can get into that and make it really complicated, but for purposes of today, it's about muscle. When we talk about lean mass, we're talking about muscle. And now we're going to talk a little bit more about protein sources and why that's so important. And one of the benefits of protein, as Kevin was kind of alluding to in a roundabout way, is satiety. So if you eat a little protein, you're going to feel full longer. And really, that's what your body wants, a little more balance. It doesn't want all sugar or all protein or all fat at any one meal. It wants a balance. And so if you look at the 40-30-30, you know, carbohydrate 40%, 30% protein, 30% fat, somewhere in that range, you know, it's generally probably what most of us will do well with. We're talking a little bit about manipulation of those macronutrients. So how are those going to change? Well, if I'm going to do a long bike ride on a weekend, I'm going to need a little bit more than 30% carbohydrate in my diet. So I might adjust that up to 50, 55, maybe 60%, maybe higher, depending on if I'm competing as an endurance athlete. But on days when I'm not, you know, it might come back down into the 40-30-30 range. So on protein, We're going to talk a little bit about protein sources, and Kevin, I need you to plug in and with Greg on this and give us some protein tips, because one thing I've learned is that we'd probably need a little protein at each meal. Would you guys agree with that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I kind of have a little different technique when it comes to like the 40-30-30 percentages that you were referring to. I want to clear the air on this just quickly. That's a okay, the average person walking down the street, when you tell them you need to eat 40% this, 30% that, 30% that, they're going to be like, that's going to be deer in the headlights, glazed look, mouth dropped open.
Right.
Because who wants to walk around with a calculator? Who wants to walk around trying to figure out percentages of foods? I don't. That's not easy for me.
Right.
So what I say to myself is, I just want simplicity. What's the easiest way to be simple with life and when it comes to food and diet? So I just like to get a portion of protein, a portion of carbs, and a portion of fat with every single meal I have.
Yeah.
That's the easiest way to do it. The best use your palm of your hand as a guide. There's all these different things people use out there. Next to cars, the size of your thumb, they try to get complicated with all these subdivisions. I think that's a bunch of baloney. The easiest way is the size of your hand. A chicken breast the size of your hand, a portion of quinoa the size of your hand, a portion of Brussels sprouts the size of your hand. Done. Meal's finished. Eat it and go walk down the street. That's simple. That's laser light focus to me.
Hey, Greg, you got a new book out with Michael, Coach Yourself Thin. I mean, does it have some examples in the book for people?
Yeah, we have a structure, you know, and all the information that would allow you to build a plan based on your height and your age and your activity level. You know, there's a pretty good system in there, and it's a good starting point.
Okay.
But certainly all the numbers as far as protein and where you get protein, whether you're a vegetarian or vegan or meat eater.
Okay. Everybody can check that out at NovoWellness.com, N-O-V-O, wellness.com. It's Coach Yourself Thin, published by Rodale. It was released this year or last year?
It came out right before Christmas, and you could also get to it at CoachYourselfThin.com.
Great. So that's a good reference, and we can loop back to that for sure. Cool. Hey, we want to do a little piece on Greek yogurt. And Kevin, I need you to chime in on that with Greg, because you know, one of the things that came up with all the post-hydrostatic weighing sessions that I was doing with the dietitian out here in California, people were asking, okay, I'm not eating enough protein to maintain or gain muscle. What kind of protein do I need to eat? Because in a lot of people's minds, that's red meat, okay? So
right.
One of the things that kind of blew people away was this whole Greek yogurt thing. So last night on Facebook, one of my friends was talking about some Greek yogurt she bought that had fruit in it, and I started looking at that. It's like, you know what? I put a little comment back to her. I said, you might want to check out the quote-unquote fruit component of that, you know? and because I said, you know, what's in the first five ingredients? Well, it, you know, the first five ingredients had, you know, cane sugar in it and regular and fructose and all this stuff. I said, you know, you've got basically a sugar bomb. And I know it tastes really good, but I'm just saying, you know, even last night on 60 Minutes, they did a thing with Dr. Sanjay Gupta about how sugar is being viewed as a neurotoxin. It's actually a toxic substance. There's some people going so far to say that we need to include sugar in the same category as cigarettes, you know. So we got to start thinking about how to, you know, get this lean, healthy protein without all the sugar. So can you guys throw out some stuff about Greek yogurt here?
Sure.
I'd love to explore on this, if I may, just first, for a second. I do remember all the neurotoxin stuff about the sugars. We did a show with Dr. John Lester. Remember when we talked about that?
And Lee Collier. Was, I mean, we were talking about that last year, for sure.
Yeah, they're adamant about sugar being a neurotoxin. As addictive as cocaine, I believe, was words used by someone.
That was mentioned at the American College of Sports Medicine Conference in particular, that it was equivalent to actually, it was a 60-minute special. They talked about it being like cocaine neurologically with the testing. That's pretty mind-blowing.
That's crazy, but it's crazy mind-blowing, but it's absolutely true.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about Greek yogurt again. Basically, it's a more creamy version of yogurt, and it's I would say three times higher in protein than regular yogurt. And I'm a big fan of the whole food, the whole fat thing. You know, when it comes to yogurt. When you start getting into the low-fat and the fat-free stuff, you're taking something away. You're robbing it of something. You're robbing it of fat, but you're also taking away some of the nutrients, in my opinion.
And what usually goes in? What usually goes in the place of fat coming out?
Sugar, usually.
Exactly.
They sugar it up and give it more flavor. You don't need to add sugar to yogurt. Fruit, I'm fine with fruit as long as it's just fruit and nothing else but fruit.
Right.
That's why I say to people, if you're going to eat Greek yogurt, get the plain and then manipulate it on your own because you know exactly what's going in there and how you're doing it. I personally like agave syrup. Agave is basically, it's from a cactus. It's sometimes called agave nectar. It's low in glycemic index. It tastes and kind of looks like honey, a little more runny,
mm-hmm.
and a little more clear, but it's really good. And I'll get like a Greek yogurt and I'll just like literally drizzle it across the top. I'll get like the big tubs of it, and I'll just mix it up, and I'll just eat the top portion, and then I'm done. And I have maybe 10 tablespoons, and I'm finished. 200 calories maximum. You got a good shot of protein, low glycemic carbohydrates, and a good amount of fat. There's my meal right there. Boom. I mentioned before, feeding every 2.5 to 3 hours. That's what I'll do. Or I'll sprinkle some hemp seeds in there, too, to make it a little more calorically dense.
Well, Kevin, you would have been proud of me, because basically that's what I told her. I said, you know, go for a natural Greek yogurt. I said, you know, we'll give you some examples here shortly. And I said, put your own fruit on there because
yeah.
you don't need all the extra added, you know, fruit. What do you think on Greek yogurt, Greg? Are a lot of your clients using that?
Yeah, and, you know, I want to thank you, Ron. This is such a good thing to bring up because, you know, refined sugars sort of sneak in various ways, and yogurt is probably one of the worst. For people that are, you know, interested in eating healthy and feel like they're eating healthy, they're, you know, there's even like, gosh, certain brands, I don't know if I won't name the company, but they have like these yogurts for kids, right? That are like for babies and for kids. And a lot of them are packed with refined sugar. So, like, here's a comparison. Somebody were listening. What you do is just look at the grams of sugar. So, as Kevin is saying, look for the plain yogurt
mm-hmm.
and then look at the grams of sugar. And it, there's a natural sugar there that's going to be there. So, you know, the label doesn't tell you what is natural versus what is refined or added. But if you compare it,
mm-hmm.
so here's an example. Here's a plain yogurt, 11 grams of sugar in 6 ounces. And here's a French vanilla yogurt, 21 grams. Now there's 10 grams of added sugar. That's how you know, because you know if plain is your baseline, then any of these flavored ones or fruit ones, they're going to be, you know, some fruit sugar added, but a lot of it's going to be the added sugar. So how much is 10 grams? Well, 4 grams is a teaspoon. So 10 grams is 2.5 teaspoons of added sugar in a little 6-ounce cup. That's what we're talking about, 2.5 teaspoons of sugar. That's a lot of sugar.
I think the recommendation last night based on – and here's what's interesting about technology. It's changing what we know so fast that you really have to stay on top of this. So this is all generated out of the latest like neurological – you know, technology that's looking at brain function as people are sipping on soda and what happens in the brain waves and all this. But I think the recommendation was last night, if I recall correctly, is about 100 grams of sugar a day. I mean, we're getting a third of a pound a day or something like that. I mean, it's outrageous how much sugar we're eating. And then they compared it to the cocaine or the drug induction. So if you're, you know, we know if you're doing drugs, typically that high will kind of wear off and you have to do more and more and more to get even less of an effect. That's kind of what's happening with people when they're eating sugar and fast food as well. So it's just, this whole sugar thing. And you got to be careful because here are people, they're trying to do the right thing. Like on Facebook last night, I mean, you're trying to do the right thing. And these food companies are duping them. They're seeing the influx of interest in Greek yogurt because of the protein, because protein's tied to weight management now. We know that, you know, we need the right kinds of protein. And so they're taking advantage of that on people, and they're duping them with sugar.
Yeah.
You know, it's just sad, you know.
And all the companies are starting to get into the whole Greek yogurt thing now, too.
Exactly.
Just like we rewind back to the minimalist shoes. You know, RJ and I have been into barefoot running and barefoot fitness for years. And all of a sudden, all the companies started touching on the new barefoot movement. So every company in the world now has a minimalist shoe. Everybody. And that's a big hot market. Well, it's the same thing with the Greek yogurt. It's actually the same thing with the whole organic food industry, period. Everyone's trying to cash their chips in with it now.
Exactly.
Everyone from local people to, like, national chains and stuff like that. They're trying to cash in with organic. They're trying to cash in with Greek yogurt. They're kind of trying to cash in with, you know, hemp seeds and making products with, like, hemp seeds and flax seeds. And the list goes on and on.
Well, that's why I love what we're doing at the Lean Brace, because we won't sell out. We won't sell out, right? And we're really digging into the bottom line for people and trying to.
Yeah.
And it's very, very confusing. And we all have degrees, and we're professionals in the business. It's very confusing, you know. even for us. So we're happy to do this and help people out. But hey, let's talk about, because I know Greg's time's pretty limited today as we move forward. So how about some whole food protein sources, Greg? Can you shoot out some things? Kevin's got a little list started there, but do you want to chime in on that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, you think about quality animal protein, and today that's a little harder to come by. You have to put some thought into it, right? But
right.
You can find it. You can find it, and obviously there's a lot of natural. I mean, you know, I don't know how detailed you want to go into this, but certainly, you know, there's certain fish out there that are obviously very healthy, and there's a lot of fish that are farm fished. You know, and likewise with if we're talking about chicken and beef too. So I think that's part of the challenge today is doing your homework to make sure that you're looking for animal products that are not, you know, given hormones or their feed doesn't contain animal byproducts. Basically, you know, going to Whole Foods is a good place to start.
Right.
If you're new to this kind of thing. And then, you know, then there's a lot of plant proteins as well that you can choose from. I mean, I it really depends on what balance you want. But for me, I buy this tuna in a can that's low mercury, because that's one of the concerns about tuna. And like wild salmon is in a can. So that's actually a lower cost version of salmon, would be a canned salmon.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also buy the wild that's frozen. I look for that coming out of Alaska. What about you, Kevin?
What's the deal? Hold on a second. What's the deal with the low mercury tuna? Is there a brand name for that, or because I haven't heard of that?
Yeah, well, you know, the problem with tuna is it's just one of these big fish,
right?
And
right.
They bioaccumulate, right? So the thing there is, there's specialty companies. Wild Planet is a label that will market low mercury.
Okay.
I think it's okay. There's actually better ones if you look around on the web. You know, they might cost you $5 a can, but it's really good. Like, it doesn't taste like canned tuna, especially the smoked tuna.
Interesting.
I think it's fantastic. But anyway, these fish are 3 years or younger. They're caught off of long lines.
Oh, okay.
So it's more of a sustainable fishing practice. And my kids, I have two, I have a 3-year-old and a 1.5-year-old, and they both just gobble it up. It's pretty awesome.
Interesting. What do you got on that, Kevin?
Well, another thing you want to look for, oftentimes on a can of tuna or salmon or something along those lines, it'll say dolphin safe. And that's usually an indicator that it comes from a clean, reputable source, too. As far as the situation goes on lean or quality proteins go, of course, chicken and turkey breasts are always a safe bet. Lean beef and lean pork. Pork is actually one of the highest creatine sources of a non-supplement form. People don't know that, but I eat pork from time to time. And, of course, you always want to go lean. Pork tenderloins are really good. Eggs are great. Fish was already covered by Greg. Salmon, any type of cold water fish is really good. You want to look for Norwegian, Alaskan, or it'll say maybe Arctic Ocean, or it'll say like right on from cold waters. Those are indicators. Wild game is fantastic. Any kind of venison, deer, elk, anything that's shot out in the wild is good because it's basically organic, other than the fact that it eats like whatever, it eats what it eats. But
right.
You can kind of categorize it as organic because it's not being shot up with anything. It's not being fed anything. It eats on its own. And people always raise the concern to me about acid rain running down and animals eating from that, like grass and stuff like that. And they're saying it's impossible to have organic wild game or whatever. And I'm like, well, if you want to break it down to microscience like that, I guess possibly you're right. But just breathing the air you're gonna accumulate those same toxins. So don't give me that crap because I don't want to hear it.
Well, we got to eat though, man. We got to keep it simple.
Yeah,
we got to keep it simple and lean berets. We can get too extreme with this, you know.
Yeah, I know. I know for bloody fact that elk that was shot yesterday on the pasture is going to be way more healthy than the steak that you buy with the pink slime in it. So don't give me any crap.
That we could do a whole show just on the slime. So there's a lot of protein in non-meat sources, vegetarian sources. Can you guys like rip on that really quick? Of course, we got dairy, eggs, and seeds and nuts
like,
and beans and grains and quinoa and tofu.
Yeah, I like
tempeh. Go ahead.
Tempeh is good because it's a fermented type of soy, so it has more like minerals and probiotics and stuff like that in it. But it depends on what type of vegetarian you are, because there's not just like one. Unfortunately, there's not just like one type. There's lacto-ovo, there's pescatarian, there's flexitarian, there's vegan. There's all these different ones. Basically, lacto-ovo means people eat like eggs and cheese and stuff like that, but they won't eat red meat or chicken or fish. And then you have the pescatarian, which is someone who eats fish, and they'll eat dairy and all that kind of stuff. They want a red meat. And then you have the flexitarian, which is kind of what I am. And I eat, like, depends on the day of the week, but there'll be days where I eat no meat at all. There'll be days where I'll eat free-range beef. There'll be days where I'll eat eggs. There'll be days where I have cheese. There'll be days where I won't have nothing. I'll just eat vegan-type stuff.
Cool.
So those are all different types of vegetarianism out there. But some basic vegan foods would be, like, seeds, nuts, beans, grains, quinoa, tofu, just like RJ just said. Greg, I think you had a couple more added at the bottom there. Did you have seitan in there? Seitan?
Yeah, which is for some a vegan, it's a non-soy protein source. Yep. And then tempeh is a fermented soy, as you mentioned, that I think is a little more digestible.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Cool. So basically, if you're eating meat, just, you know, do your best to have organic meat that's not contaminated with growth hormones and different types of pesticides in the food. Vegetarian
right.
proteins, there's a lot out there. You don't have to just get it from meat. But the same thing, be careful chemical contamination. And then I've got a lot of people asking me about protein supplements and post-recovery drinks. And what I've been emphasizing with them, you guys, is you've got to understand that a supplement is a concentrated form of something else, right? So if you're talking about protein powder in particular, there's been all kinds of issues with heavy metal contamination and different things in that protein powder at a concentrated source that are very unhealthy. So last year or the year before, we put together a one-page handout just on protein power and in particular the powders and supplements. So you can go to leanberets.com and check that out. And some key things to look for, you know, go organic. Don't get anything with artificial colors or flavors or artificial sweeteners or RBGH. What the heck is that, Kevin? One of your favorite topic areas.
RBGH is an abbreviation for recombinant bovine growth hormone. It'll be a small R and then a capital PGH. And if you're going to get a protein powder, if it's legitimate, it'll usually say, oftentimes it'll say RBGH-free or it'll say RBST-free. And RBST is recombinant bovine somatotropin. So it's a whole other, it's a hormone. Or it'll just say hormone-free on it. So any one of those headings is totally safe and totally clean. And you always want to go hormone-free, antibiotic-free as well. And again, scan your label for the artificial colors, the artificial flavors, anything that has like a number or an actual color written in there is no good. It's bad news.
Right, because remember that's all in concentrated form if it is in there.
Yeah, it's a highly concentrated form, and you're just megadosing yourself. You don't want to do that.
But just hit up our website, theleanberets.com, look under education or nutrition. You'll see the handout listed there. It's one page. Take it with you to Whole Foods or wherever you're going and get some healthier protein choices for sure.
Yep.
So just closing comments, you know, these are the tricks of the trade that we talked about today for boosting that resting metabolic rate. What do we mean by that? Well, you're going to not just maintain the muscle you've got, but hopefully add some muscle with getting a little more protein, which probably a lot of people need, a little bit higher protein intake. We've given you some tips today on how to get clean sources of protein so you're not just going to McDonald's and eating Big Macs because we would never advocate that. Eating multiple times a day so you don't slip into that starvation mode and start storing your food as fat. Making sure you drink breakfast. Lots of water, too, in particular if you're having a higher intake of protein, need a little more water. You can do some other cool things, too, to boost your metabolism like cayenne pepper and high-intensity exercise, but we've run out of time today to get into that. But basically, you know, eat enough to meet and exceed your resting metabolic rate, which for a woman is probably, from what I'm seeing, is going to be at least 1,300 to 1,500 calories a day. And for a man is going to be, you know, 1,600 to 1,900 calories a day on up to 2,500 plus. You guys got anything to add in summary?
No, that sounds right as far as your numbers. Yeah, you know, the other thing with metabolism is just make strength training, right? Just having a consistent routine there. And then getting 7 to 9 hours of sleep has been shown to help boost the RMR. And I think that's hormonally driven.
Cool. Yeah, a lot of we do a show just on sleep, and I'd like to continue on with the protein power shows, and maybe we can tap into the fitness component of that, you guys, because there's a lot of tricks to optimizing muscle and fitness as well. And there's a lot of misinformation out there and just confusing data. I've got some of the latest updates on strength training as well from the American College of Sports Medicine Summit.
Yeah, I think that would be good subject matter, and I think we should also go into the differences of protein and which ones are most beneficial for what times of day to take them, et cetera. You know, like the difference between egg white and whey and casein and so on and so forth. I think that might be an interesting subject matter to touch on.
Right. Well, we won't get into this too much today, but they were talking about the percentages of whey protein being higher in certain things than others, and how you're, especially post-recovery, certain types of protein are more optimal than
right.
others because they have a higher percentage of whey protein. So that gets a little more technical than we have time for today, but we're happy to dig into that, and we'll continue this series because I think there's a lot of focus on the media right now, right today, on protein and how it relates to weight management and also athletic performance and recovery. So it's a fascinating topic. A lot has changed based on technology and emerging research. And of course, like anything, it's going to be confusing, and we're happy to dig into that for folks and simplify it. So again, thanks, Greg, for coming on the show again. Really appreciate the work you're doing with Michael over there at NovoWellness.com. If you guys want some examples of things we're talking about today, check out their new book called Coach Yourself Thin. And Kevin, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show as well.
And you as
Thanks,
well.
Ron.
All right.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Greg. Have a good day, everyone.
You've been listening to Lean Braze Radio Show at TheLeanBraze.com. Music today provided by Van Halen Army. A new kind of truth. Go get some. It's good for your health. Tell them the Lean Braze sent you. Until next time, keep your foot in the accelerator for health and rock on.